Star Wars or Doctor Who? Star Wars or Doctor Who? Star Wars or Doctor Who?
His name is Rob.
His name is Rob.
He knows his Wookiees from his Daleks. Listen now.
Listen now.
Hear the Force challenge the TARDIS. Get your blue milk and jelly babies while we see which drives you crazy. Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Who Wars. This is the podcast for those of us who just can't decide between Star Wars and Doctor Who. This is episode 14 of the show, and I'm your host, Rob Irwin. First up, how was your week? Mine was pretty good. I spent the first few days reflecting on the weekend and the podcast, you know, that the team here had put together. And it's funny, you know, when you put out a podcast on a Sunday night here in Sydney, you're recording for, you know, most of the weekend. You're recording little segments here and there, you know, due to time zones with other people or, you know, just producing across the weekend. And across last weekend, I've got to say that my sense of the reaction by people to the fact we now have a female master was pretty positive. In fact, I said that in my review of the last Doctor Who episode, Dark Water. I commented that, you know, everyone's just taken this in their stride. They're like, okay, it's a female master now. That's great. Missy's quite funny, had some good lines. You know, whether it was, I'm in charge, or, you know, Dr. Chang, you know, the those great lines. Or whether it was just the fact the character was now female did not seem to be phasing people. But you know what? I was wrong. I think I just must be following a pretty decent group of people on social media. Or maybe I've muted enough people or blocked enough people that I only see a particularly kind, friendly, progressive kind of point of view, because that's how it came across to me. When I started to dig a bit deeper, however, and hear other people's stories, and a great case in point for this was I heard Neil Perryman talking on the Zeus Pod. Zeus Pod is a New Zealand Doctor Who podcast. He was referring to some of the people he'd been out there actually arguing with over this. I'm thinking, gosh, arguing? I didn't even see anything to argue with. But he had come across people saying just ridiculous things like, oh, obviously, you know, a female master is softening the blow for a female doctor. And that's not so much the ridiculous part. In fact, I was commenting on that as well, I think, in the last episode, that it's paving the way that if a future showrunner wants to do it, there's a precedent that they can always point back to. A precedent that's always been there and who, to be honest, but anyway, I digress. No, the silly thing was, they were saying it's a precedent for a female doctor. Okay, I can cop that, you know, I agree with that. But then they were saying, so what happens then? Do we have to call the show Nurse Who? And you just stop and ponder that and you think, are these people so stupid they don't realise you can have female doctors? Are they so stupid they think all females in medical facilities are nurses and none of them are doctors? Like, wow, that really speaks to the kind of mentality that would say that kind of thing. And I can see why Neil was getting into fights with those people and why other people were shocked at some of the reactions to the potential of a female doctor, or their reactions to the master now being female himself/herself. And gosh, you know, it kind of made me feel like, oh, my review was a little off then, because I was saying how everyone was really progressive and was quite cool about it. And I think, you know, I still think a lot of people were. I still think a lot of you out there were completely like, oh yeah, this is, you know, a new path in the master story. That's all there is to it. You know, what else is there to say? This is great. Let's move on. But yeah, I just want to acknowledge that there were morons out there. Maybe some of you out there had to deal with the morons. And I just wanted to acknowledge that in case you thought my review was perhaps blind to that. I guess at the time it was blind. But now I've seen more of it. I've heard other people's stories. And, you know, that's really sucky stuff that people out there could be so stupid to think it's a problem that the master's now female, or that if the doctor became female, it would have to be Nurse Who, etc., etc. It's just, there's no accounting for the intelligence of people out there, you know, when you deal with the greater public. That's all I'll say on that. Anyway, I also made a mistake in the intro to last week's podcast, and this was picked up by the boys over at Diddly Dum. So thank you very much, lads. And it's good to hear that there are people out there listening to the show. I kid. And look, the mistake I made in the last few podcasts, I've been plugging a Star Wars and a Doctor Who podcast and just letting you folks out there know about, you know, cool podcasts that I listen to or that I know about, and letting you know why I listen to them or why you should listen to them and so on. And last week I did two, and they're in the show notes, so that's a start. And the two I did were a Star Wars one called Coffee with Kenobi and a Doctor Who one called Binro Was Right. But you know what? I didn't actually mention the name Binro Was Right. I did the whole Coffee with Kenobi thing, and then I swung into a spiel about Binro Was Right and comparing and contrasting it to how it's quite different to Coffee with Kenobi, but hey, I like both kinds of podcasts. Blah, 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 blah. And as I was here going through that spiel and just perhaps not concentrating as much as I should have on actually getting the name out, I didn't name Binro Was Right. Now, again, it was in the show notes, so if you've looked at the show notes and you've seen the two links relating to that, you'll have seen that it was Binro Was Right. But that's the name of the podcast I was talking about, the Doctor Who podcast I was talking about last week. Binro Was Right. So my apologies to the team there. And again, well spotted to the Diddly Dum lads. Thank you. I'll try not to make that mistake this week when I run through my two podcasts of the week this time. Later this week, I did something very cool. It doesn't relate to Star Wars or Doctor Who directly, but it does have a Star Wars link. Now, if I can digress, there's this PC game out there that's been crowdfunded initially on Kickstarter and then later on its own website to the tune so far of $60 million. Now, this is the biggest Kickstarter slash crowdfund of anything ever. That's right, not just video games, but, you know, when you think of all the different things people kickstart, like electronics projects or documentaries or books or, you know, whatever people are out there crowdfunding, this is by far the biggest crowdfund of anything ever. And it's still going. The game is still in development, and by the time the game is, you know, out fully, it's being released in little modules here and there, they could have $100 million in the bank. They could have more than $100 million in the bank. Now, the game is called Star Citizen, and it's being put together by a chap by the name of Chris Roberts. And Chris Roberts might be familiar to some of you gamers out there as the man who made the Wing Commander games back in the 90s. Also made a movie based on Wing Commander. Also did another few different space sim type games. If you think of things like Star Lancer and Freelancer and games of that ilk. A really top guy, a really great old school developer who's, you know, even now only in his 40s. And I got to meet Chris Roberts this week. He'd been down in Melbourne doing a show called PAX Australia. The PAX people have different PAX shows around the world at different times of the year. And PAX Melbourne had just been held. And then after PAX Melbourne, Chris, his brother Aaron, who runs his UK studio, and their vice president of marketing had travelled up to Sydney. I think they may have even drove so they could see a little of the country along the way. And I knew they were going to be in Sydney. I got in touch with the VP of marketing and I said, hey, look, if you're going to be in Sydney, it'd be great to hang out and have a beer. I would love to, you know, snap a selfie, bring in some Star Citizen merchandise to get signed and just have a little bit of time with Chris and the team. And to my great surprise, well, maybe not to my great surprise, because they are such a great bunch of people, they said, sure. And so this past Thursday, I took a flex day off work, and I went in with my wife, who's also a big Star Citizen fan. We sat down at a bar by the Opera House, overlooking the Harbour Bridge, a really great location. And Chris Roberts, his brother Aaron, Sandy Gardner, all these people showed up. And we spent a lot of time with him. Chris had just come from recording a TV show called Good Game. And he spent a couple of hours with us, almost 2.5 hours actually, before going back to the same TV studio to do a news piece. Now, how does this relate to Star Wars? Well, glad you asked. Chris Roberts when he was making Wing Commander, was very inspired by Star Wars. I think Star Wars, for him, he was born in 1968, so he was, what, about 9 when Star Wars came out. Star Wars, for him, like many young people of that period, just inspired him to go on to do something cool. In his case, it was make video games set in space, and he made the Wing Commanders. And here in Star Citizen, that Star Wars feeling is really amped up to the nth degree, because you've got all different kinds of ships, and it's a big universe, and you can do what you want. You can be a smuggler, you know, like Han Solo, in air quotes. You can be a fighter pilot, perhaps like Luke Skywalker, in air quotes. But you can do all sorts of other stuff, too. You can get in a big reclaimer kind of ship and go off and find space hulks and, you know, claim salvage out of them and process the metals and so on and then sell them. You can be a trader, you can be involved in commerce in other ways. You can take on different roles in this big sandbox universe, and it's currently being built out at the moment, you know, module by module, you know, so they can test different things. For example, there's a dogfighting module where it's just you load in and you can fly around and dogfight against people. That will be part of a bigger universe at some time, but that's all that is available at the moment. So they're building it in modules. They've raised $60 million. There's a strong Star Wars influence behind it all. Of course, it's its own game, and it's got its own unique background and stuff. In fact, it's based a lot on the last days of the Roman Empire, where you've got, you know, Rome in the west, and you've got Constantinople in the east, and all that kind of vibe. You've got the Vandals coming down, which in the game are aliens called Vanduuls, V-A-N-D-U-U-L-S. So there's this whole vibe based on Earth-based history as well. So it's not a Star Wars clone by any means, and no pun intended when I say Star Wars clone. But the man behind it has a Star Wars background. Playing the game will give you, I think, a sort of a Star Wars feel. If you want to get into a freighter like Han and Chewie and just get around the universe doing odd jobs, you can do that in this game. It's really amazing stuff. I think the lowest buy-in to get the eventual game when it comes out and a basic spaceship is like $30. So it's very cheap to buy into. You're backing the game, essentially, and you'll get to play these modules as time goes on. And if you want to buy bigger ships at this time to help support the game, you can, which means when you start the game, you'll be in a bigger ship or a more specialized kind of ship. That's cool, too. And yeah, there's basically 600,000 of us out there who have backed this game and who are just so eager to see it and think, you know, Chris Roberts is just a legend for making this, not only for the PC. You know, he's eschewing the whole console generation. This is going to be a PC game. It's in the vibe of the old school space sims, but it is this big sandbox world that, you know, you just couldn't do in the past in video games. It's amazing stuff. And I got to spend time with him, and part of that conversation, I've got to say, was on Star Wars and his feelings on the prequels and what he thinks of J.J. Abrams doing the new Star Wars film and all kinds of stuff. It was an amazing conversation, just sitting there in the Sydney sunshine, two iconic landmarks beside us, sipping on some beers. Just amazing. Just amazing. If you know me on Facebook, or you have seen perhaps even the Twitter from RSI, which is Robert Space Industries, the company putting together Star Citizen, you'll have seen some pics of myself and my wife and Chris, and just great times. I've probably talked about a little more than I should have here, but hey, if there are people out there into Star Wars and Doctor Who, there's every chance you might be video gamers, there's every chance you might game on your PCs, there's every chance you might be really interested in Star Citizen and just haven't heard of it. Even though it's raised $60 million in crowdfunding so far, I still come across people who have no idea about it, and I tell them about it and they get very excited, and some of them go off and buy a game package straight away. So I don't know, I'm sort of glad I mentioned it here at length, because it's worth it, and there is a bit of a Star Wars link too. Anyway, thank you for indulging me on that. All right, podcasts of the week. I want to mention two, as I normally do. The first, for the Doctor Who fans, is Reality Bomb. This comes out of Canada and is a highly polished magazine-style show, has a lot of contributors and a lot of work that goes into it. You know, it has news and reviews, but also little skits and bits of music and so on. It's a really good listen. It only comes out monthly, so it's not something you get into week after week. In fact, you know, monthly is almost too long for me. I'm really hanging for the next episode after I hear an episode of Reality Bomb. But monthly it is. Really, really recommended to you out there if you're a Doctor Who fan. There aren't that many episodes of it. I think there might be, gosh, I want to say 13 or 14 or something like that. I might have that completely wrong, but it's a low number like that. So it's not been around too long, maybe a year or so, and well worth your time. The second one I want to mention is one I kind of half mentioned in a recent episode, which is Rebel Force Radio. And I think I mentioned it originally because I was talking about podcasts that have a sort of a radio feel to them. And Rebel Force Radio, as I might have mentioned, does go out in some limited way on radio in the US, but it's primarily a podcast. But when I mention that radio thing, it's to give you the idea that it really does have production values that are right up there, like you're listening to, you know, some FM radio with the intro music, the production style, the way the guys present, even their voices. You know, when you listen to a lot of podcasts, you hear all kinds of voices, and that's a glorious thing about podcasting. No matter what kind of voice someone's got, they can get out there and make a podcast. But here you've got guys who have got really good radio voices, not quite traditional, hello, you're listening to, you know, not that kind of deep radio voice, but just a voice you could picture being on radio. And for that reason, I quite like it. They also get a lot of good guests. They get a lot of great news segments and so on. And on their feed, they have more than just the Rebel Force Radio show. They also have, oh gosh, I'll probably forget some, but they have shows like Fangirls Going Rogue, which is an all-female show, which is quite interesting to listen to. They have a great one called Star Wars Oxygen, which for people who are into the music of Star Wars, they've got a guy who sits down and sort of deconstructs pieces of music from the trilogy, the original trilogy at the moment. I think he'll get into the prequels at some stage in the future. And those episodes are just fascinating because he'll pull out little bits of the music and he'll sit there with his keyboard and play, you know, just a few notes here and there and explain what the music is doing or what it's trying to convey or how the bits of music in a certain scene relate to each other. And oh gosh, really great stuff with Star Wars Oxygen. So there's more than just one show on Rebel Force Radio. They do have this whole bunch of shows which are very, very interesting. They've got a show, I think, for Star Wars Rebels where they go through each episode and really, really strip it down. They have even special guests on those shows. I think Freddie Prinze Jr. was on one of those, for example, the voice of Kanan. So if you're not listening to Rebel Force Radio, will I stick my neck out? Yeah, I think I'll stick my neck out and say it's probably the number one Star Wars podcast I would listen to just across the board, because they've got the production, they've got the news, they've got the interesting segments, they've got all these other shows as well. So while there are some fascinating Star Wars podcasts out there, across the board, I think Rebel Force Radio really takes the chocolates when it comes to an all-round Star Wars podcast that's worth your time. Anyway, this intro has probably gone on a little longer than I expected, but hopefully it's been of interest. I know I've got a lot to get to in this episode. I'm recording this hours before the next Doctor Who episode goes out, so I've not actually seen Death in Heaven at the time I'm recording these words, but it is coming up, and I will obviously be doing a review later in the show, which you'll hear. It'll be a different me reviewing that, I'm sure, now that I'll have seen the conclusion to this series of Doctor Who. I wonder what it holds. I don't know. It's very exciting. And of course, later in this episode, we have Lex with her weekly Doctor Who review of Dark Water this time. We've got Kate coming back with her secondhand Star Wars segment that she's doing every 3 or 4 weeks. And a new Doctor Who comic. So, look, guys, without any further ado, let's rip into the episode. Let's rip into my stories of the week, because there's some good stuff there as well. And I hope you really enjoyed this episode 14 of Who Wars. All right, and on to my top stories of the week. And for the first story this week, I've got a special guest. It's Kate.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Oh, you know, getting by. How's your week been?
Oh, it's been pretty good. Announcement on Thursday really made everything awesome.
Announcement? I know of no announcements.
Right.
All right. For those of you who have been hiding under a rock, Star Wars Episode 7 got its official title this week. And Kate, what is it?
The Force Awakens.
Now, I know you've done a page full of notes on this because you've shown it to me on email. So, do you want to kick off with some thoughts on the name?
Sure. My initial reaction... Well, first of all, when I saw the logo with the name right in the middle between Star Wars, you know, I thought it was a game or something, maybe. I didn't realize that it was actually the title. Yeah, but then I realized that, and I loved it. And I like it because it has mystery, nostalgia, and maybe even danger.
Ooh. What do you think, what do you think the danger might be?
Well, if something's awakening, like, maybe it's been dormant for a while, we don't know, like...
Yeah, definitely a possibility. My friend Cameron on Facebook got a bit funny about it. He said, oh, The Force Awakens, hasn't The Force been awake all this time? You know, he was kind of being a bit sarcastic about it. And I said, well, it could be that The Force awakens in one of the characters.
That's true. And one of my points that I had written down was kind of along those lines. I said that we're assuming the Force is the same Force that we all know and love, but it could simply be referring to a more generic Force or power.
Ooh. Now that'd be a sort of a curveball, as you Americans like to say.
Yeah, so yeah. The use of the word Force, though, I think that's spot on. That was brilliant on JJ, or whoever was in charge of that, their part, because, you know, all the older fans and the younger fans recognize the Force as being an important part in the Star Wars universe. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to really unite the fans, I think.
Yeah. Now, I would imagine it's JJ. I think he's co-written with Lawrence Kasdan, who also wrote Empire Strikes Back. I would assume those two guys came up with the name.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Good job, guys.
And something else I noticed about this on Rebel Force Radio's Facebook feed, I think I read it, is they got in touch with Lucasfilm and said, hey, is there no Episode 7 in the title? Because all this time we've been referring to the film as Episode 7, and I think recently when filming wrapped, JJ gave everyone a baseball cap with just the Roman numeral 7 on the front. And it had a little letter with it saying, thank you for, you know, helping on the film. Here's a token of appreciation, blah, 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 blah. And that had 7 on it. But Lucasfilm have confirmed to Rebel Force Radio that Episode 7 is not part of the official title. What do you make of that?
Yeah, that's a little bit interesting. I don't know that... Does that mean that it's not going to be even in the opening crawl? I don't know.
Well, I mean, people have been mocking up, you know, opening crawls on the internet, and they've been putting Episode 7 in it, but apparently it's not part of it. And I've got a few thoughts on that. I think maybe they're trying to distance themselves from putting numbers in the title because they think by the time they get to Episode 9, it might start to look a little weird that it's a 9-part series of movies. Maybe they're trying to keep the 6 parts to be... You know, the Anakin Skywalker Darth Vader story, and now, even though we've got some of the old characters in it, maybe this is a whole new thing they're trying to do.
Yeah.
Maybe because they've got these other films they're going to make, maybe an Obi-Wan film, maybe a Boba Fett film, maybe a film they keep calling Red 5.
Right.
They wouldn't have episode titles in them, so maybe they're trying to make these new movies just blend a bit more with those movies. I'm not sure.
Could be. Yeah, I don't know either.
Yeah, or maybe it's just a big lie and we'll go to the cinema and it'll say Episode 7, blah, blah, blah. You know?
Yeah, that could be.
But for now, you know, there's no Episode 7 in the title. It's you know, some people have been mocking up logos where they've put a, you know, a 7 in the background of, you know, Star Wars. And but officially, no.
Huh.
Hmm. Any other thoughts on that piece of paper?
Yeah.
I knew there were a few.
What else? Well, we haven't really heard what Andy Serkis is, or who he's going to be playing. Is he going to be playing The Force?
He can play a lot of things, but that might be a stretch even for him.
Oh, that was kind of just being silly. and then also, the midichlorians, are they going to factor in this if it is The Force that we think that it's referring to? We'll have to see.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, fans were so negative about midichlorians because they liked the fact that Star Wars was a science fantasy and there was an element of magic to the Force. And when it was explained so scientifically, they really didn't like it. And, you know, from what I can see, Disney has been distancing themselves from the prequels in a big way. You know, people tell me when they go to Disney stores, it's full of merchandise that relates to the original trilogy, and then these new films will come out and it'll be merchandise relating to them. And it's like the prequels never existed in Disney's world. I don't know whether that will change, but maybe they'll just gloss over some of that prequel stuff, like midichlorians.
Yeah, that's true. I have another interesting point, maybe.
Yes.
It kind of goes, you know, you're saying about your friend saying that, was the Force asleep? Well, we know, like, from the viewer's perspective in the movies, we see the Force in action and we can see what it has done. But it seems like the general populace of the Star Wars universe don't feel that way, because Han said at that one point, he says, hokey religions and ancient weapons, yada, 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 you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then General Mahdi tells Darth Vader your sad devotion to that ancient religion. So it seems like the Force doesn't really have a big pull on the general people.
Yeah, yeah. And look, even Zeb in a recent episode of Rebels referred to it as an old religion or something as well.
Right. So maybe the Force is going to be awakened to its full power, and we'll really get to see that in the movies.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a big bad lurking in the background. I'm trying to be not so spoilerific in my comments here, even though I've said a lot more in past episodes. There's a big bad lurking. We have some younger characters. Are they Force sensitive? Do they meet up with the big bad, or do they meet up with Luke Skywalker and get some training and the Force awakens in them, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe along those lines.
That's true.
Maybe one of them teams up with the big bad and one of them teams up with Luke.
That could be very interesting.
And then they all face off, perhaps. Who knows? I'm just making stuff up at this point.
We still have over a year. So that's my last point, is it December 2015 yet?
No, it's not. I can say that categorically. In fact, I had that conversation with a guy from my job on Friday, and we were walking along, and he is a Star Wars fan. He's my age. He grew up with the films. And he had no idea that Episode 7 had been filmed.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, dude, they've filmed it. It's in the can. And he's like, well, when's it out? And I said, oh, well, another year now, you know, because they've got to do special effects and all that sort of stuff. But as far as the filming goes, yeah, they're done. You know, Mark Hamill shaved his beard off and had a bit of a haircut. They're done.
They're done.
Hmm. So, we've got the name. Do you want to revise your thoughts on a trailer?
Yeah, I do, actually. Well, okay, I think instead of just having one teaser trailer, I think maybe we'll get a teaser trailer.
Ooh.
In the next month.
What's a teaser trailer?
It's shorter than a trailer, or it's shorter than a teaser. It's a teaser of a teaser.
So it's shorter than a teaser, but it's longer than a teaser trailer, perhaps.
Yes, something like that. But no, it seems like from all the chatter that I've been hearing on Twitter and everything, that we will probably get something within, or before December, I'm thinking. Something visual. Something.
Yeah, well, I know in that famous speech that Kevin Smith did at Comic-Con or wherever it was. Actually, I think he's done it at multiple locations, because whenever I see the footage, it's always slightly different. He did mention that JJ showed him some rough cuts of stuff, and he was saying how good it looked already. So they certainly would have some footage they could perhaps show without spoiling anything, and would just give people a taste of what's to come.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe we'll get a teaser this month. I don't know when we'll get a full teaser. maybe they'll just go ahead with the regular teaser trailer. But I still think it would be awesome to get our full trailer at Star Wars Celebration.
Mm.
I think I'll stick to that.
Okay. Yeah, look, the timelines are all sort of changing from what the prequels were, which is what I'd been basing all my guesses on. You know, well, for the prequels, they did this. Right. Because they were examples of movies released in the modern era, and I thought, well, if they're going to do the same sort of marketing, it might be similar, but no, maybe things are changing.
They're onto the Disney way of things.
Yeah. And look, when it comes to a trailer, I'd be happy just to, I don't know, be have the camera tracking behind maybe an X-Wing pilot walking along through the hangar with all the X-Wings.
Yeah.
You know, just 10 seconds of that, just so I could see some X-Wings and see a costume and see the film grain, because he's shooting it on real film instead of digital, and just go, oh, that looks like Star Wars. That would excite me. I wouldn't have to see anything else.
Did you see the teaser? You know, before I had mentioned that maybe it would be in front of the Cinderella movie that comes out, I think, in March. Did you see the teaser for that one? It was just like a glass slipper, and it's like 30 seconds, or no, it might have been like more than a minute of just like this glass slipper. So what if it was like a lightsaber, or I don't know, something very Star Wars iconic, and it just, that would be really cool.
That would be very cool. All right. Have you got anything else on that piece of paper, or will we throw it open to the folk at home?
I think that's about it for me for now. Maybe I'll come up with some more thoughts in the next weeks to come. I'm sure I will.
I'm sure we're all going to have all sorts of thoughts and dreams and many things about Episode 7 before we're done.
Be awakened by the Force, right?
Exactly. So, you folks at home, what do you think? What do you think of the name? What do you think it might mean? Will we get Episode 7 in the title at some stage? Is that just a bit of misdirection at the moment, or are we going in a new direction? Are the original films going to be capped at 1-6 and we're in a whole new era? I don't know, you know. Let us know what you think. But until then, thanks for joining us, Kate.
All right, may the Force be with you.
Alonzi?
I was just... keeping it Star Wars Central this time.
Oh, my bad. See, so I've been watching Doctor Who earlier, so I'm all over the place.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
All right.
Bye. All right, moving on with my stories of the week, and thanks again to Kate for popping in to talk about Episode 7's name. I think it's awesome when, you know, the team pops in to chat about things like that. It's really time zones that precludes us from doing it more regularly. But maybe as the year starts to wind down and I take some time off work, I can perhaps record some more stuff at different times of the day with Lex and Kate, and we'll get them into the show more and more. I know they've got some fans out there. All right, the next story is, I'm not sure if I've spoken about Elstree 1976 on this show before. It's basically a documentary about behind-the-scenes characters in the Star Wars trilogy, particularly Episode 4, which was being filmed back in 1976 at Elstree Studios in England. And it's been put together, this documentary, by a chap called John Spearer. And I know John Spearer because many years ago on Kickstarter, I backed a documentary he made called Anyone Can Play Guitar. And it was basically about the band scene in Oxford in England, which has spawned bands like Ride and Radiohead and a whole bunch of bands you've probably never even heard of, mostly indie bands. And that documentary examined why so many good guitar bands came from Oxford in the 80s and 90s. A really fascinating documentary. So that's how I came across John Spearer. And then one day he popped up using the old mailing list and said, hey, I've already recorded a bunch of footage for this. I want to do this Star Wars documentary. And I'm like, oh, I'm so there. Where can I give you my money? Jumped onto Kickstarter, funded the thing, and it's in post-production at the moment. And we got a little update from John Spearer about how Elstree 1976 is going, and I thought I might read this out. It's tough fitting post-production around a full-time job, but I've been preparing the edit a little bit every day, and this week, Hank, me, and my cat have rented a cottage in deepest, darkest Dorset to get away from London and distraction and concentrate fully on the edit. Obviously, Hank and the cat aren't focusing on the edit. Hank is busy talking with distributors and overhauling the budget, whilst the cat is mainly sleeping and chasing dust. I've decided to edit in chronological order. I already have a good idea of the structure and how I want it to play out, so I feel happy starting at the beginning and working through to the end. I've known for a while how I wanted the film to open, and I'm pleased to say that even in this rough form, it works and sets the tone that I want for the film. My hope for this week is to get a rough cut of the first third of the film. We now have a schedule in mind. We're aiming for a rough cut, and by this I think he means a full cut, by the end of the year, and a first cut by the end of February. We're hoping to have the film ready for release next November. Good timing there, coming out just before Star Wars Episode 7. I think that might play into John's plans just a little bit. So there's a rough schedule for you. Will we manage it? Who knows, but it's what we're aiming for. So that's a very cool update from John Spearer and the Elstree 1976 documentary. I am just fascinated to see this because when it comes to, you know, the original Star Wars films, the trilogy I grew up with, I devour everything and I have devoured everything. You know, name me a book on the making of the films or, you know, documentaries made to date. I've seen it or I've read it. And here he's getting some people who might not have done a lot of on-camera stuff before. Maybe some of them have never done any. Maybe if you've gone to some smaller conventions in the UK, you might have came across these people at a, you know, signing table or something. But otherwise, this is pretty untapped stuff. I'm very, very excited about the Elstree 1976 project. And that's an update. Moving on, Daniel Radcliffe is doing the rounds on a lot of talk shows at the moment, and he appeared on Conan recently where he talked about visiting the Episode 7 set and meeting Harrison Ford and so on. They've chucked up a bit of this on YouTube for promotional purposes, so let's have a listen in to some of Daniel's story.
You crashed the set of the Star Wars Episode 7 film, which J.J. Abrams and so many of those iconic cast members are shooting, and they're shooting it in London.
Yeah, they're shooting it at Pinewood, which is a studio we shot not all, but a fair bit of Potter stuff in. And I know almost the entire crew from Potter has transferred to Star Wars and are now kind of getting ready for like another 10 years sort of somewhere, and or however long it's going to be, you know. But it was amazing. I'm actually a very recent Star Wars fan. I actually only watched the original films for the first time this year.
What?
I know.
You're
that
kidding.
Amazes
That's, that blows I mean no, that it, blows my mind.
It's crazy, and I think it's my parents were never into it, so it never sort of got passed on, and then, you know, you're a teenager and everyone's telling you to watch something, so you're like, I'm not gonna watch what you're telling me to watch. And then I finally came around to them this year, and they are amazing. And it's fascinating to me because originally, I imagine what made them so successful and popular was because people had never seen effects like that and things like that.
Sure.
But what makes it stand up is how, like, the storytelling and the characters.
Is fantastic.
And, you know, it's they're brilliant movies. I'm like a new Star Wars fan, which is very weird to be. And I said
now,
that.
Did you tell? I mean, I'm sure that J.J. Abrams was there and he was excited. Who was there? Who did you talk to?
I had a conversation with Harrison Ford, mm-hmm. which was really, really cool.
Yeah.
It may have been on the Millennium Falcon, which was also
what?
Really cool.
You were on the so well, I think we know that. I think
that's why I feel safe saying that, because I feel
because you can't tell us anything.
I can tell
else.
You nothing,
right?
Like nothing,
right?
And also because I don't really know anything. I was just going around going, "Oh, this is fantastic," right. But I think that it's. I think
spaceships.
That
spaceships.
Yeah,
well, exactly. I mean, it's so cool, and it really is. And yeah. But what was even cooler about it was, and I did admit to J.J. Abrams and Harrison Ford that I'd only recently seen them, and J.J. Abrams looked at me for a second like I had grown another head, but then Harrison Ford sort of saved me by saying that he has, I think it was saying one of his daughters might not have seen them or something like that, which made me feel a lot better in that moment, because I was pretty, I said it like a really jokey, I've only seen them recently, and immediately sort of thought that might have gone wrong.
Very, very cool stuff there. I love hearing people's stories from the set of Episode 7. You know, it really kicked off for me, I think, when Kevin Smith did that long monologue about visiting the set and going on the Millennium Falcon and all that kind of stuff. And since then, different people, mostly celebrities, have mentioned being on the set and having little reactions. Most of them talk about visiting the Millennium Falcon, so I think that might be kind of like an amusement ride at this point. You know, if someone comes to the set, well, they're not coming to the set now because I think principal filming's finished, but when they were coming to the set, it was like, take them on the Millennium Falcon. That was like the go-to part of the set to take people. Obviously, it would be a very impressive set to see from the outside and also go inside on. Just the attention to detail from the pictures we've seen already, you know, attest to that. Rounding out my stories for the week, we had the Doctor Who episode Dark Water last week, and its conclusion today. In fact, I review it later in the episode here. And the BBC actually received complaints about Dark Water. So this is taken from the BBC's complaints section of their website. They say the complaint, I guess this is from multiple people, so this is, you know, an aggregated version of the complaint. We receive complaints from some viewers who are unhappy with a storyline about death and cremation. The BBC response: Doctor Who is a family drama with a long tradition of tackling some of the more fundamental questions about life and death. We are mindful of the themes explored in Dark Water and are confident that they are appropriate in the context of the heightened sci-fi world of the show. The scene in which a character reveals 3W's unconventional theory about the afterlife was preceded by the same character warning the Doctor and Clara several times that what they are about to hear could be distressing. When the Doctor does hear these claims, he immediately pours scorn on them, dismissing them out of hand as a con and a racket. It transpires that he is correct, and the entire concept is revealed to be a scam perpetrated by Missy. So that's interesting. That's the complaint, and that's the BBC's response. I'm not sure about this introduction to the response, although I agree with the response in general. I'm not sure about this introduction that Doctor Who has a long tradition of tackling fundamental questions about life and death. I'm really not sure about that. You know, tackling some of the fundamental questions about life and death. Back in the original series, you know, it was very rare for companions or people we would see on a more regular basis to even die at all, let alone explore questions about life and death. You know, when Adric gets blown up in Earthshock, did we really go into it in great detail? When we thought Perry died in Mind Warp, you know, did it really go into lots of fundamental questions about life and death? No. Even in the modern series, I'm not too sure off the top of my head that we've really seen that. I'm sure someone will tweet or write in or something and say, oh no, in this episode blah 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 happened. I'm sure it's justifiable in some way, but just off the top of my head, it's kind of a statement where if someone said it to me as a long-term Doctor Who fan, you know, I'm 39 years old, so I've been watching it for, what, 34, 35 years. If someone said that to me on the street, I'd kind of question that. I don't think Doctor Who does have a long tradition of doing that. You know, a long tradition suggests it does it very often, and I can barely think of any examples. So, But yeah, look, in general, I think people complaining about this storyline, it was a little dark, but, you know, when Doctor Who pushes the boundaries and scares people, makes them a bit anxious and nervous, that's when Doctor Who's working, because, you know, without meaning to sound smart about it, that's drama. You know, if you're not doing that, you're not being very dramatic. So, if you want drama, you've sometimes got to put up with feeling slightly uncomfortable. At least that's my take on drama. I don't know about yours. As always, with any of these news stories, whether it's this BBC complaint, or whether it's Daniel Radcliffe on the set, or John Spearer's documentary, or Star Wars Episode 7 getting its official title, please write in. Let me know what you think. Twitter, Facebook, email, whatever you like. All the details are at the end of the show.
This is M.A. Timber reminding you that for free, full episodes of Doctor Who Dark Journey, news, cast info, and much more, visit us online at amaudiomedia.com.
Cool beans!
Okay, the Star Wars Rebels episode this week was called Breaking Ranks, and joining me as always to talk about Star Wars Rebels is my wife, Leo.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay, how are you?
I'm not too bad. How's life down the hallway?
Oh, it's better than it is at your end, I'm sure.
Is it? I'm closer to the air conditioning, though.
Oh.
Anyway, let's get on with it. Breaking Ranks. This was, gosh, what can we say about this? This was Star Wars Rebels meets Ender's Game.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. At least when they're in the academy and the cadets are basically doing Ender's Game type maneuvers.
Yeah, they're not floating through the air, but they are doing lots of athletic stuff and competing against each other, and they're sort of the Ender's Game age of kids as well.
Yeah, I was a little unsure about what age they were supposed to be, but I think they're like 12, 13-ish.
Yeah, well, Ezra's meant to be a little older than that, maybe 14 or 15, but maybe not much older.
It's a little hard to tell with the cartoon hair and the cartoon eyes.
Yeah, there is a visual dictionary for Rebels, which I've been remiss in buying. I should buy that, and it's probably got some profiles on how old everyone is and all that sort of good stuff.
Mm.
But anyway, they're at the Imperial Academy, or a Imperial Academy, I should say. Ezra's undercover with a secret name, and they're doing all this exciting Ender's Game type stuff. And at one point, the Imperial officer says, You'll march out of here in a few weeks, and you'll be soldiers. And I thought, oh, no, they won't, you know? they're not big enough to be stormtroopers. They're not old enough to be soldiers. I wonder what that actually meant.
I think it was just a kind of a throwaway line that no one put a lot of thought into. When they put it in there, it just sounded kind of dramatic to be like, oh, and first your children, then your soldiers overnight. Kind of, that's dramatic effect mostly.
Yeah, because we know the Empire likes its throwaway troops and its TIE fighters don't have shields and all this sort of stuff. We know all of this, but I don't think they throw kids of this age into stormtrooper uniforms. I mean, they're not even tall enough, you know. They're a little short to be a stormtrooper, I think, is probably the right line there.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, I mean, people listening to this probably have seen the episode, so we'll go through it quickly. Ezra's undercover. He's sneaking about. He gets busted by one of the other cadets called Zare Leonis, who I thought you'd like because you like the names based around Leo and Leonis and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah, that name stuck out to me.
And at first, we're not sure if Zare Leonis will betray him, but it soon becomes clear he's going to help Ezra because his sister's gone missing. I think the implication is that the Inquisitor comes along, and any kids who have some sort of force sensitivity or that they think might be force sensitive, he probably comes along and either takes away to train or maybe takes away for more sinister reasons. Maybe he takes them away to kill them.
Could be. I don't imagine that they're running into too many force sensitive kids. But, you know, they've rewritten the EU, so anything's possible now.
Yeah, well, I guess in the EU it was certainly not common, but you know, there were a lot of people who were Force-sensitive to some degree, but they would never be Jedi because it just doesn't manifest itself enough to be useful, but they maybe might have a little edge over someone else, and I guess that's what they're looking for with those kids, you know, ones that just have that little bit of an edge. I think they're probably investigating to see if they might have, you know, Force-sensitivity, perhaps.
Or it might not even be Force-sensitivity, it might just be they might be more useful as, like, spies or, you know, intelligence gatherers or some other elite sort of unit.
Yeah. Now, while all of this is going on, you've got Kanan and Hera up in the Ghost. They're flying around, you know, waiting for a report. Because what Ezra is trying to get is the location, I think it was the location of some Imperial ships that were carrying Kyber crystals. Now, these weren't explained at all in the episode.
I'm still rather confused about the significance of the crystals and why they make things go all green and why that's bad.
Well, Kyber crystals are force-attuned crystals that grow on Ilum, and they're used in making lightsabers. They probably have other uses, but in the EU, this is what Kyber crystals were. But that wasn't explained at all in this episode. Again, we've talked...
Is that old EU you're talking about there, or new EU?
Oh, well, there's very little new EU. Not that we would call it new EU, but I know what you mean. No, this is from the old stuff. This is old school EU.
Okay, so that, for all we know... Okay, if these are just force crystals, and we've seen force crystals a lot in, old EU, why would they make a whole ship explode, and why are... Like, how many of these things are there? I always thought that once the original trilogy came along, that force crystals were a very unusual thing that people didn't really know much about anymore because they had all been destroyed.
Yeah.
Presumably in the battles on Ilum.
They're certainly rare. I do know through when this episode originally went out and I was watching people talk about it on Twitter, some of them, the Clone Wars fans, got excited because apparently there was a whole series of stories on Utapau where a giant Kyber crystal was found. Now, I don't know whether it was that giant Kyber crystal that was on that ship or, you know, or that's where they assume people will know Kyber crystals from. Maybe they were explained better in those Utapau episodes. Again, I don't know, because I gave up watching Clone Wars, you know, as a bad joke. I will go back and rectify that at some stage. Maybe that's why they didn't explain it.
Relying on people to already know? I don't know. It would have helped a little bit to explain why Ezra needed to be undercover for so many weeks and why they wanted to find the shipment, but okay, I guess there's only so much time in each episode.
And we'll come back to that in a moment. So while Freddie Prinze Jr. and Vanessa Marshall are circling around in their ship, Sabine and Zeb seem to be hanging out at this academy but not being found. I wasn't sure how realistic that was, that they could be hiding behind crates for weeks on end.
That was absolutely not realistic, and I was a little disappointed because, as you know, they are my favorite characters, and they got very little screen time in this episode. I can see Sabine maybe being stealthy, not for long periods of time, because she is wearing Mando armor, but Zeb is a little less plausible.
Yeah, well, they're just sneaking behind crates, and apparently they'd been doing that for weeks. It was weird.
And all they had to do was paint up Chopper in, like, different colors, like, and that was good enough to bypass... okay, whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
Just roll with it.
Yeah, oh, look, and we do. I mean, I'm still just rapt that we've got stormtroopers running around being shot at and blown up, and, you know, it feels a bit like old-school Star Wars. I'm still in that phase, you know, even though I can intellectually point out these problems, I'm still really happy with the show. But we mentioned a moment ago the length and how that is still affecting storylines, and I'm starting to think it is a bit of a problem. How about you?
Well, we still haven't got an actual story arc. Like, we're starting to get reoccurring characters. Like, we saw Agent Callus again. He didn't really do much. The Inquisitor was there again. I think we even caught a glimpse of that female ambassador or whatever her name was. So we're seeing characters over and over, but we're not getting an actual arc. We're not getting an actual story that spans multiple episodes. And, you know, maybe that's okay most of the time. Like, this episode on its own, self-contained, was pretty good. It was action from start to finish, and it, you know, it told two stories. It showed Ezra's story, it showed what the Ghost was up to, and the way it cut between them was really great, and it's a very old-school Star Wars, and I love that. But in terms of telling an overall engaging story, it hasn't found its voice yet. The show. I don't feel like it has set its own tone. Its own what you want to call it. I don't know.
Yeah, I know where you're going with that thought. And yeah, and look, next week it looks like it's, you know, the Sabine and Hera show. They're stuck somewhere with some monsters, and they've got to try and fight them in the darkness. You know, you can sort of tell what's going to happen in those 21 minutes already, without even seeing the episode.
Yeah, I'm still looking forward to it, obviously. It'd be great to have a girl power type episode, because there are going to be lots of female fans out there that will be more drawn to those two characters, I think.
Oh, absolutely. But I guess my point is, it looks like, you know, each week it's, oh, this is the Ezra episode, this is the Ezra and Zeb episode, oh, this is the Kanan episode, you know, and this was another Ezra episode, and next week it looks like a Sabine and Hera episode, so... It's like in the early days of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, where it was like Monster of the Week, and there was no arc.
I was thinking of old, like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle episodes and stuff. Like, this is the episode where you find out that why Leo's the leader, or this is the episode where Raph loses his cool, you know, like... With the show that has so many episodes, they have the freedom to kind of do that, which is kind of cool, because later you can reflect on that and be like, oh, I see where that character is coming from now, because I had so much attention focused on them. But if we don't get into some, like, serious, like, story arc stuff soon, besides just, like, Kanan teaching Ezra how to be a Jedi and stuff, I don't know if I'm going to feel much connection or... like an emotional connection to this show until that I feel like I can get invested in it.
Yeah, I'm sure things will change, because on the Clone Wars, I know enough about the Clone Wars to know that they did have story arcs and they did have episodes that linked together. So it's not an alien concept to these people who are writing the show and producing the show. So I'm sure it will happen. It's just not happening yet.
No. I guess we still need, like, there's still a lot we don't know. Like, we don't know a lot about Sabine yet. We don't know a lot about Kanan yet. Or Hera, for that matter. Like, I mean, we still have a lot of ground to cover, and it's still early days. But I would hope at this point we'd have an idea of where it's going and what we're getting into. Like, normally at this point in a show, I'm either really hooked or I'm, like, not really that interested, but I'll keep watching and hope it gets better. I'm kind of the latter at this stage.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, because they're meant to be starting the rebellion or part of the rebellion, and indeed, with one of the kids who escape with Ezra, Jai-Kel, you know, he's going back to his mother, but as Hera pointed out, they're going to have to go on the run now from the Empire, but she's got friends who can help them. So Hera's already got connections. Hera, you know, can already make this sort of stuff happen. But we haven't seen the crew of the Ghost sort of hook up with other rebels yet or sort of do things in a bigger, more coordinated way. I guess that's still all coming, but I'm really looking forward to getting into that stuff because I feel that we've got a feel for these characters now. Let's get into some arcs. Let's get into some real rebellion stuff.
Yeah, it's not really feeling like a rebellion yet. They're just kind of this oddball crew that kind of helps the rebels when they can, but, you know, it doesn't seem like that's their overall goal yet.
Yeah, but who are the rebels? We haven't even met them.
I don't know.
Anyway, overall, how did you feel about this episode, maybe compared to past episodes, and what would you sort of rate it?
I really enjoyed it. For the action and stuff, the Ender's Game type stuff felt a bit cheesy, I guess, a little, because it's like, here are these kids moving around on these platforms, and I thought, well, I'd rather, like, play a video game that has that element in it than watch these kids do it, but that seems maybe that was for the kids, and I'm too old to appreciate that.
I think it might have also been a throwback. Again, I don't watch Clone Wars, but I've heard that in some of the Clone Wars episodes, they were training clones using similar styles.
Okay, fair enough.
And so maybe there's an overhang now into how they train kids, you know, a decade or a decade and a half later.
If they spent less time focusing on, like, training sequences, they could tell a story, but okay. In terms of overall enjoyment factor, I would say it's a 7 or maybe an 8 out of 10 for me, because it did feel very old school Star Wars, especially when the space combat, come on, TIE fighters and shooting and laser bolts going every which way, that was pretty fun.
Yeah, the Ghost being chased by, I think those Imperial ships were dropping 4 TIE fighters at a time, so it fought off at least 8 TIE fighters, I think.
Yeah. The animation when the thing exploded, though, loses points for that. That was cheesy.
You didn't like that green, glowy kind of effect?
Yeah, Harry's like, watch out! And or Kanan was like, watch out! And I was like, what is it? It's just a shockwave, you guys. Calm down. It's not gonna, like... Okay.
On the plus side, though, you did get to see where that little ship launches from the Ghost.
Oh, yeah, the Ghost looks good. I like seeing more of it.
All right. Yeah, look, for me, solid episode, good fun, you know, although I've poked holes in it and, you know, could drive a truck through some of these things, I still enjoyed it, you know, so yeah, 7.5 for me too, good fun.
Well, one other thing, do you think we'll see Leonis again? Because it kind of was implied that him and Ezra were going to keep in touch.
I think so. You know, but for better or worse, who can say? Maybe the Inquisitor will take him under his wing, and maybe, you know, Zaire Leonis will turn a bit bad.
Yeah, I could see that happening. That seemed like it was being set up.
You know, or maybe we think he turns bad, but in the end he'll come through for Ezra, you know, in episode 18 or something.
Maybe.
Who knows? Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's probably not the last we saw of him.
Yep.
All right, then. Well, next episode is called Out of Darkness. That's the one we're talking about with Sabine and Hera. And we'll bring that to everyone next Sunday.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, Leo.
Thank you.
Hey there, it's Lex. And it's time for my review. Let me start by saying I am very, very confused. Let's take a step back and go back to Deep Breath, the first episode. We first learn about the Promised Land from the half-faced man, and he's been trying to get to the Promised Land for a very long time. He's ancient, right? And so if they've been doing this, if he's been kind of targeting this Promised Land, maybe he also found some kind of link of the telepathic voices that are being uploaded to this particular cube. So let's assume that happened, that he somehow found that trace and he's been trying to get to the Promised Land ever since, okay? That would make sense. Except for the part where, if that was true, they have been collecting human dead bodies and uploading their minds for such a long time that is way more than necessary to take over the world. You know, they should have taken over the world a very long time ago. So that makes no sense. I'm disappointed that this promised land isn't actually a promised land. It's completely fake. And I'm disappointed. How do you think that half-faced man or the robots from Robot of Sherwood feel about it, huh? You think I got it bad? These guys, oh man, I feel bad for them. So much effort wasted. Whatever they were expecting the promised land to be, I don't think it was it. We learned that, okay, it's possible to upload a mind from the body when it dies, when the body's dead. So, I don't know if they were suggesting that the whole premise that you can feel what happens to your body when you're dead is actually true, or is this something that the Cybermen have completely created on their own, and that's not actually a natural occurrence of death. It's not clear what the show is stating as to what actually happens when you die. It may be the case that in reality, when you die, and that this whole afterlife just gives you an extra extension of your mental abilities, and therefore is evil because people have been cremated for a very long time, and if indeed we are wrong to do that, then that's pretty awful for them to say. So, Doctor Who, watch it. I, for one, was seriously regretting my choice to be an organ donor during the episode. Scary. So let's hope that isn't true. Okay, and yeah, backing up all the way again. Hey, Danny died. That was horrible. Absolutely horribly horrible. Can't believe they did that. With the death of one character, they bring in another. Missy. The trade isn't quite equal, but oh, how I love Missy. Missy is incredible. I did not see it coming that she would be this insane and, like, you know, this schizophrenic. It's so good. I love that the welcome package, and the doctor asks who's in charge, and she goes, I'm in charge? It was funny. Yeah, so Missy's incredible. I'm confused, though, what the Master slash Missy is going to gain from helping the Cybermen. Really? It seems like such a petty goal. Just to kill the Doctor? Is this her way to spite the Doctor, take over Earth somehow? I mean, does she really think the Cybermen are going to let her remain the way she is? If we've learned anything, the episode The Age of Steel, this goes back to the 10th Doctor. John Lumick, that guy who was the creator of the Cybermen in the episode, the Cybermen turn against him. Same thing's gonna happen to Missy. So, I don't know. Strange move on her part. Also, where are the Cybermen going? What is their goal? To convert the entire planet into Cybermen? Well, it looks like they've got a ton already. And when they left the building, they seemed to be going off to, like, the cemetery. She said, like, bring out your dead. It was unclear whether the humans' dead people were already assimilated into Cybermen. So when she said, bring out your dead, she was referring to the Cybermen already in the mausoleum. Was that the case? And if so, why are they going out to get more bodies from the graveyards? It seems like those Cybermen, I mean, they'd need a factory of some sort, right? So how are they going to get all the dead bodies to some kind of area? Or not how, but they will need to get all the dead bodies from the graveyards into another area where they can properly upgrade the bodies, so to speak. Which seems like a lot of extra work and stuff I personally don't want to see in an episode. Seems too tedious. But Because otherwise, if they're heading to the graveyard, which it seemed, bring out your dead, she said, I got the sense that those Cybermen, once they came out of the mausoleum, that they were going to a graveyard. Why would they need to do that? Because these Cybermen, they're in a mausoleum. They're already using bodies of the humans, right? Why would they need to switch bodies? They just got those. So where are they going when they leave the mausoleum? I got the impression they're going to a graveyard. And I know there are scenes in the next episode that are in graveyards, so I would love to know the explanation as to what's going on in the Cybermen plan. Also, why upload the mind at all? Why can't they just take the bodies of the dead and leave it? Like, they don't need to be conscious, right? Or maybe I'm getting that wrong. Because all the other episodes have involved live human beings. Maybe there's a reason for that, because they need an active mind. Yeah, that makes more sense. So what the heck are they using dead bodies for, huh? Is it just that just their minds are uploaded, so now their dead bodies are suddenly okay? As long as their minds are intact, their body is fine. Right! No, that does not make any sense either. Sorry. It just seems bizarre. I don't understand the premise of this conversion, and I would appreciate it if someone really just explained it to me. You can do that on Twitter, guys. Or not, just leave me to the next episode. I'm sure I'll figure it out eventually. And, yeah, it just killed me that, well, it didn't kill me, it killed Danny, literally. That Clara, she finally was owning up to all her lies, everything she did wrong, and then he just died. That was just so ironic. Clara, her character has done a 180, and for me, liking her, I've done a 180. I went from really just not liking that character at all to kind of understanding her a bit more, I think. And man, she's fun. Now I don't want her to go. I know I said I wanted her to go a couple reviews back, but I changed my mind, guys. She's super cool. And she's smart and tricky and manipulative and clever and vulnerable, and she does own up to her lies in the end, so everything's better now, right? Maybe I'm just being naive. But I like her a lot more. I've enjoyed her character. I hope that Clara and Danny end up in a happy place. Man. This show's tough. Okay. Hopefully all my questions will be straightened out next week, and hopefully no one else will die. Thanks for listening, and listen to me next week. Bye.
Well, here we are. Doctor Who is finished for the year, at least as an ongoing series. There is a Christmas special to come, of course. It's finished, kaput, done, over, and this is actually the second time I've tried to record this. I recorded a full 15-minute piece, and when I listened back to it, I realized it was just so all over the place, and that's really indicative, I think, of how I feel about this episode. I enjoyed the first part of this, Dark Water, and I felt going into this episode, as I said last week, we'd have a more action-packed episode, and we did. You know, we had Cybermen flying around the skies like they were Iron Man, we had them attacking a plane and bringing it down out of the skies, we had all sorts of action, and we had a conclusion to the story, and we saw Danny Pink have a noble end, all sorts of stuff, and yet I sit here still now feeling unresolved. Very unresolved, actually, and a big chunk of that is due to the Doctor and Clara's relationship. The Doctor and Clara sat in a cafe and had some words with each other. There were some interesting lines here and there. The piece about, you know, hugging hides your face from the other person was curious. Clara thanked him for a time in the TARDIS. The Doctor said likewise, and that was it. Or was it? I think there's got to be more to come. I mean, in the preceding episode, Dark Water, Clara had a bunch of sticky notes posted up, things that she had to tell Danny, and some of those did look like they might have been relating to a pregnancy, perhaps. We do know that Danny Pink had a, well, we assume it was one of his ancestors, Orson Pink, in the future. We met him in an earlier episode. So is Clara carrying Danny's baby? We don't know. I think we might have not seen the last of Clara. I've pointed to reasons for this in the past, notwithstanding the fact that she's the ongoing companion in the new Titan Comics 12th Doctor series of adventures, but also that there's this kind of hazy, shrouded kind of feel as to whether she's in the Christmas episode at all. I mean, some people on one side will say, no, she's not. She's going around the world doing conventions at the moment, and BBC contracted people don't do that sort of thing, you know, unless it's a BBC convention. So, yeah, look, she's done with the show. But that ending between the Doctor and Clara just was so, again, unresolved. I feel that there's more to it. I feel we've got to see some more of her. And even in the way for the past, well, for most of the series, I've been pointing out Clara heading towards a fall, and she didn't actually have it. Clara didn't do much of anything in this episode. I mean, even at the start where she said to the Cybermen that, you know, Clara Oswald has never existed. This was the big line that had thrilled people a couple of weeks ago when they first saw it in a trailer. And my speculation was it might not be all it seems. And yes, it wasn't all it seems. She was just trying to bluff the Cybermen. But even that was an attempt to turn it into a moment for the viewers, you know, where she declares that she is the Doctor and we bust into the opening credits and, you know, Jenna Coleman has the title credit ahead of Peter Capaldi and it's her eyes in the opening credits. And all of this was supposedly to make people feel that, oh my gosh, we've had the rug pulled out from under us, Clara is the Doctor. And yet, I sat there as a fan, and I'm sure I wasn't the Lone Ranger in this, thinking, no, Jenny, you're not the Doctor. Peter Capaldi's the Doctor. Why are we going down this path? Obviously, you're just trying to fake out some Cybermen. And yet, now it's turned into this whole thing that she's declaring she's the Doctor, and we're meant to be thinking, oh, what if she is? What if she isn't? While the credits play, and the whole thing just fell incredibly, incredibly flat for me. Aside from that, Clara didn't have a lot to do in the episode except, you know, emote with Danny Pink every now and then had the sign-off with the Doctor at the end. It was a very strange ending. I keep coming back to this. I did in the previous review that I scrapped before re-recording this, and I'm doing it again now. I don't feel satisfied with how that relationship ended at all. Or did it end? Who knows? One thing I can say, though, is Peter Capaldi, the other side of that relationship, has just kept his end up all series. You know, the scripts have been a bit up and down. Some have been more interesting than others, but he has always turned in a good performance of the Doctor, and in that respect, he's a lot like Matt Smith, because I always thought Matt Smith portrayed a great Doctor despite having some really awful episodes to go through. I think on the whole, looking at it, Capaldi's had better stories so far than Matt Smith was getting in his final series, but that's not saying much. I think there's still room for improvement. And with so many of these stories being Earth-based and having the relationship between Clara and Danny Pink, that soap opera-ish kind of element, you know, if in Series 9 we can get out into space and we can do some more interesting stuff and get away from that soap opera stuff, I'd be very, very happy. Who else was in this episode? Well, Missy, the Master, Michelle Gomez, however you'd like to refer to her. Just bonkers. Just crackers. Fantastic. You know, it may just be a hyperbole, but I'd like to say that's one of the more interesting portrayals of the Master since the days of Roger Delgado. I realise that might be controversial with some of you, but so be it. I think she was just unhinged in a way that the Master can be unhinged. I think the way Moffat allowed her to bump people off really added to the menace of the Master slash Mistress. I think that's what the Master's all about, you know? The Master killed Osman Osgood. The Master appeared to kill Kate Stewart. The Master killed a bunch of people in this episode. And that's great. That's what the Master does. That's why the Master is scary. If you just have sort of a pantomime Master like the Anthony Ainley Master was for many of the 80s episodes of Doctor Who, sure, he shrunk people from time to time with his tissue compression eliminator, but on the whole, he was kind of a pantomime Master. This was not. This was more in the John Sim, you know, bonkers genius mole, but just having that extra spin of being female for the first time, dressing like Mary Poppins, even arriving in the graveyard at one point in the episode on an umbrella. Just very funny, very entertaining. And although it did seem that Missy got shot and dispatched, I'm wondering if that's the case. Earlier in the episode, when she sort of beamed from one location to the other, the flash of light as she beamed away was blue. And when she got shot, in theory, by the Brigadier wearing a cyber suit of all things, the flash was blue because Cybermen have a blue weapon. Or was it? Or was she perhaps beaming away at the last minute? And we think the Brigadier killed her, but maybe he didn't. On the Brigadier himself, that was a little unexpected. I feel that we had said goodbye to the Brigadier in an earlier series of Doctor Who, where the Doctor wanted to be in touch with the Brigadier, called through and was told that the Brigadier had passed away. I thought that was a beautiful way to remember Nick Courtney and a beautiful way for the Brigadier to go out. Here, having him resurrected in a cyber suit, even though he did save Kate Stewart and, you know, was the last Cyberman standing, because the rest of them had already, you know, self-sacrificed at that point, and then he flew off into the sky, I assume, to blow himself up as well. Nice, but I felt that the Brigadier had had his farewell in Doctor Who, so it was kind of weird to see him back. It was kind of weird to think that his corpse, his bones, perhaps, had been reanimated as a Cyberman for the Brigadier's final bow on the show. I felt a bit strange about that, did you? Yeah. Speaking of reanimating bodies and bones and things, I could understand the plan that Missy had and the cyber pollen, you know. I know it's unpopular when I talk about Doctor Who being science fantasy, but it really is. And, you know, this idea of magical pollen that could create cyber suits underground and magically generate plastics and metals around bodies to turn them into cyber. Okay, let's go with that. Let's take that on face value. This is, after all, the show about a madman who travels time in a blue box. But when it comes to older bodies, I mean, I'm not trying to be gross here, but the Danny Pink, his corpse was fresh, if I can put it that way. He was a complete body. He was there filling out the cyber suit. I understand that. But some of those graves that people were crawling out of were very old. Some were from the 1700s, if you noticed on screen. What sort of body would be in those graves? Probably not even skeletons. Probably dust. So does the cyber pollen not only create metals and plastics out of thin air to build the cyber suit around the body, but does it also create a new body? I don't know. That's... Again, when you're dealing with a sci-fantasy, it's hard to get picky and choosy about, you know, what science you want to believe in and what you'll gloss over. But at least in past cyber stories, Cybermen were created, you know, there'd be a body and it would go through a cyber conversion process using materials that existed in the real world, not pollen that came down in rain and could do all this magical type stuff, and not just that, but create whole new bodies. I don't want to dwell on it too much because it's an icky sort of subject, but I do like to understand these things, and sometimes in modern Doctor Who I notice when they try and overreach and have these highfalutin concepts, sometimes they're not explained very well or explained well at all, you know, and you have writers saying, well, we don't want to really explain it, as if that's a reason not to explain it. No, I think if you're going to draw people into a story and say XYZ is happening, then you need to explain how XYZ happened, even if it's in a fantastical way. Otherwise, it does get a bit too magical for my liking, if I can put it that way. It's like you can just say anything you like and not have to justify it, and that's sometimes not helpful in a story that, you know, you're getting invested in. But we'll leave that there. All up, I still don't fully know how I feel about this episode. I mean, again, it had the action and adventure unit. You know, that scene on the plane with the Cybermen tearing it apart was tremendous. And the Doctor falling out of the plane and having his James Bond moment and catching up with the TARDIS. Good fun, you know. But in spite of all that, I'm still a little undecided. I was entertained, don't get me wrong. I was entertained. And I'm not saying that it was horrible and I'm never going to watch Doctor Who again. I'm not that end of the spectrum. I'm up around maybe 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10. I'm up around there. So I'm certainly on the enjoyed it scale of things, but to what degree, I'm still out to lunch. I've watched it twice at the time of recording this podcast, and I'm not sure watching it a third time in this 24-hour period would even help me at this point. I've seen it. I know it happens. I know what the acting is like. I know what the music is like. I know what happens in the plot. I have a good feel for it, and yet I still can't quite put my finger on really where I sit. Aside to say it's at the better end of the spectrum. I think it was a fine end to the series. I'm looking forward to what will happen in the Christmas episode, whether we have Jenna Coleman coming back, even for just a cameo, maybe to announce that she's pregnant, or maybe she's not in it at all. Maybe she'll pop up in Series 9 sometime with a bit of a surprise cameo there. Who knows? I mean, during this series, we had Mummy on the Orient Express, and the trailer for that had no Jenna Coleman in it, because her and the Doctor had an argument in the episode before. We thought going into Mummy on the Orient Express that it would be a Doctor-only story, and yet, you know, Jenna Coleman was in the whole thing. So we've seen the trailer for Christmas, we've seen Nick Frost as Santa, we haven't seen Jenna Coleman, but that doesn't mean she's not going to be in it. Anyway, I'm getting a little rambly. This has probably been my most rambly review of the whole series, but I think that's justified because I'm still not entirely sure what I think. What do you think? Why don't you write in? Drop me a line on Twitter or Facebook or email, and I'll read them out on the next episode of the show, because I'm really interested to hear what people are saying. Obviously, I've seen some initial reaction on Twitter, some people loving it. I'm seeing those people on Gallifrey Base who give everything 10 out of 10. You know, I think someone could polish a turd, and, you know, several hundred people on Gallifrey Base would give it 10 out of 10. But objectively speaking, I'm wondering what the average fan who, you know, doesn't go in for hyperbole and, you know, doesn't want to be overly cruel to the show either, wants to cut it some breaks in terms of the science fantasy aspects. I'm wondering where the average fan sits with this. I would assume it's on the more positive end of the scale, but to what degree, again, I don't know. Anyway, that's what I think. Let me know what you think. And next week, Lex will have a crack at the episode. Maybe she's got some different points of view to me. We'll see what she says then.
Hey everybody, how's it going? It's me, Kate. I'm back again for another installment of Secondhand Star Wars. And in case you missed it last time, this is my monthly roundup of Star Wars bargains that I find in thrift shops, garage sales, estate sales, etc. Stuff like that. And this time, I got someone here to help me. Hey, R2. What's up? Okay. Okay, I'm gonna put you down. I'm gonna put you down now. We'll talk to you later. Be a good droid. Be good. So, yeah. This is probably my favorite all-time Star Wars bargain buy that I've ever gotten. It's about a foot tall, and it's a pretty accurate replica. It's a interactive astromech droid. And so, yeah, he's battery operated, voice activated, and he actually does a lot of stuff when he wants to cooperate. He plays hide and seek. You can put him in sentry mode. He even has a cup holder. And so he's pretty awesome. And I rescued him at an estate sale. He was just sitting all by himself without batteries or anything. And so right away I saw R2-D2 and I was like, oh my gosh, how much for R2-D2? And they're like, I don't know, $5? And so I was like, okay, not even knowing if it worked or anything. But alas, it worked. And it's just been great fun. I love to bring him to cons whenever I go. He's always a big hit at the cons. And yeah, I'll have to post. I took a picture at the last Phoenix Comic Con of all of the shenanigans that R2-D2 was getting into. So that was pretty funny. But yeah, so R2-D2. Maybe I'll bring him back at the end of the show, see if he'll do any more tricks for us. All right, so on to the next thing. So I happened to notice out of the corner of my eye something that looked rather Darth Vader-esque, and I was right. It was this large capsule-shaped tin that was Darth Vader, and it said on it, Mighty Beans. And so I really didn't have any idea what that was, but, you know, I kind of opened it and I looked in real quick. And there wasn't a full set, but I noticed there was at least a Darth Vader and two Luke Skywalker Mighty Beans. And I didn't notice until I got home, actually, that there was maybe like four or five other ones, and they were from the movie Cars. But, oh well, I at least got the Darth Vader and the Luke one, so that was pretty awesome. So, yeah, Mighty Beans, I still don't really know what they're useful for or anything. They're just these little capsule things, and I guess they have like a metal marble in them or something, but they don't, I thought maybe they were magnetic or something. They don't even seem magnetic. They're just, I guess, some sort of little toys. So, but yeah, the Darth Vader tin, well worth it. Okay, so the next thing, it made me laugh. I was looking for Star Wars shirts or whatever in the clothing aisle, and I noticed a pair of pajama pants with Darth Stewie. Now, that's Stewie, like, from the Family Guy. Now, I'm not the biggest Family Guy fan, admittedly, but, you know, some of their Star Wars parody stuff was pretty funny. And, of course, you know, I gotta say, Stewie is the best character on the whole show, without a doubt. And so it's got the little Stewie wearing the Darth Vader helmet. It says, "The dark side is really cool." So that is pretty awesome, and I plan on wearing them all the time. Okay, so the next few things are Shadows of the Empire related. And so first off, similar to the Ralph McQuarrie collector's tin that I talked about last time, it's a smaller collector's tin with 6 metal embossed cards, and it's got full color reproductions from the Dark Horse comics of Shadows of the Empire. So that's pretty awesome. And then also I got the audiobook for Shadows of the Empire in cassette form. Yeah, so I'm a little bit familiar with the Shadows of the Empire story, not because I've read the story, but I've actually played the Nintendo 64 game a lot when I was younger. I'm not sure if the story is quite parallel with that or not, but I am familiar with it to that extent. So I'm excited to give this one a listen. And be sure to stay tuned next week to hear my review of Shadows of the Empire. Okay, and last but not least, it's a heart-shaped tin with Darth Maul. And this is a pretty epic way to show that special someone just how much they mean to you. I mean, Darth Maul. He says it all, doesn't he? Okay, so that's it for this installment of Secondhand Star Wars. And just like last time, if you're interested in seeing any of these things, you can check out the Tumblr that I've started called Secondhand Star Wars. And I'll also tweet the pictures out with the hashtag Secondhand Star Wars. Okay, so that's going to do it for me this time. Be sure to check in about a month or so and see what other awesome hidden Star Wars treasures that I've found. Okay, bye. Hey, R2. How's it going? Hey, R2. How's it going? Why won't you cooperate? No, I don't want to play hide and seek. R2, stop. R2. R2, we're trying to record.
My name is Amelia Pond. Since I was a little girl, I've waited 12 years and 4 psychiatrists for a podcast. When I grew up, it finally came. Its name is Who Wars. It's from a galaxy far, far away. They want minds that are bigger on the inside, such as yours. So send something. I sent something, and I've been listening ever since.
Okie dokie, and here we are at the end of the 14th Who Wars. My thanks, as always, to the team, Leo, Kate, and Lex, for everything you do, everything you contribute to the show. We'll be uploading this episode to the feed pretty late. It'll still be on time for most of you who wake up, particularly in the US, to hear Who Wars every Sunday, but we're really up against it this week, and that's primarily to do with the fact I had quite a busy week. I didn't want to sound too whiny about it in the intro or in any of the segments, but It was a pretty tough, challenging week for me in some ways this week, and I got through it, and everything's fine, but putting this episode out took a little bit extra grunt and effort than normal, but that's okay. That happens from time to time. I'm looking forward to the week ahead, where we'll be doing some really interesting stuff. Obviously, we've got 6 episodes of the back end of the Doctor Who series to look at now that they've come out. I'm sure Lex and Kate will be keen to sit down with me and talk about those. Star Wars Rebels is going on. I also have a Doctor Who comic that came out this week. It's the 10th Doctor, issue number 4. Normally I review the week a comic comes out, either the Sunday before the week it comes out or the Sunday after the week it comes out. But this week I've just run out of time, and with no Doctor Who episode next week, I thought it might be interesting to hold that over until then anyway. So if you've noted that 10th Doctor number 4 came out this week, yes it did. Yes, I have it here, and I'm going to review it in the next episode. Aside from that, I'm looking forward to the week ahead, chatting with you all on Facebook and Twitter and email and however else you might get in touch with me. And until then, until next Sunday, I remain Rob Irwin. Take care of yourselves, and I'll see you out there in some form on the web.
Well, that wraps it up for another episode of Who Wars. If you'd like to be in touch with the show, simply email hello@whowars.net. Find us on Twitter @WhoWars, or if Facebook's more your thing, at facebook.com/WhoWars. Oh, and don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. See you next time.